Okay, so another Saturday evening, and was thinking back on the early days of my training with Ajahn Chah and living at Wat Pa Pong and those early years. And one of the themes that was emphasized and I kept hearing, whether it was through Ajahn Chah or any of the other teachers, senior teachers that were there, is it was always an emphasis placed on not clinging, on non-attachment. And of course, it was only later that I getting more and more familiar with the teachings and the suttas of the Buddha, that of course that's a standard teaching. So that this evening I would sort of explore that a bit, because on a certain level not clinging, non-attachment, and it can be easily, say, misinterpreted or misconstrued as a detachment or a complete aloofness, an absolute non-reactivity, non-reaction to anything. And that's not what it is. There is a, as is always the case, there is always a middle way, a balance. That is an important aspect of the teachings, and also there is an equanimity of non-attachment, or an equipoise or serenity arising from non-attachment that is both clear but also responding wisely to the circumstances and whatever situation one is in. So that although non-attachment is emphasized, it also needs to be taken into account all the other teachings that the Buddha gives to wise action, wise speech, the brahmaviharas, the loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, taking joy in the success of others or well-being of others, and equanimity as equanimity, not as an indifference or aloofness, but as a steadiness of clear perception. So that this sense of non-clinging is just so important. And of course, say we spent 3 months of the winter retreat with Satipatthana teachings, the teachings on the basis of foundations of mindfulness. And so that all the ways that one creates mindfulness and awareness and alertness and presence of mind in one's life and one's practice. But in the sutta, every single section, which I don't know, but a dozen sections, all the different aspects of the body, a feeling, mind, dhammas, phenomena, every discrete section ends with an encouragement, admonishment to that the fruition of that establishing of mindfulness is saying the practitioner abides independently, not clinging to anything in the world. So that as we become more clear, become more mindful, become more aware, there is this not clinging that is established. So and the Buddha points to four different particular areas of clinging. And the word is upadana. And so as non-attachment or upadana is attachment, anupadana is non-attachment. And then, of course, the verb form is in not clinging to anything in the world. So the attachment to sensual pleasures, kamupadana, dittupadana, attachment to views, opinions, taking stances and fixed, and particularly fixed views. And it's not that you can't have an opinion about it, but it, of it, on anything, but it's that fixed view or wrong view or stubborn and misguided view that is the problem. If one holds a view, I mean, first factor of the Noble Eightfold Path is right view and view of freedom from suffering. But it's, say, when we hold and get and attach to views, which, I mean, you can see that in playing out in the human world all the time. The third basis of clinging or attachment is sila bhatupadana, the attachment or clinging to precept and practice is a good way. I mean, it's the old days, it used to be translated as rites and rituals, but it's much, much broader than that. It's this assumption, and on a certain level, these are all tied together, because it's another, say, another aspect of view or clinging to, if I just kept the precepts this way, or if I kept had virtuous conduct in this way, if I just practiced meditation in this way, then I would be pure. I would be free from suffering, which is, it's a misguided holding on to certain ways of doing things, certain ways of being, certain ways of training oneself, and getting so locked into that one forgets what the purpose of the practice is, like freeing oneself from suffering, because you can get so locked in that you can hold way too tightly, and it doesn't bring the fruit of freedom and awakening. And the last form of attachment or clinging is attavadupadana, which is the clinging to the assumption of self. And it is interesting that the Buddha points to it as an assumption of self, as opposed to, say, clinging to self. It isn't attavadupadana, it's attavadupadana. It's not clinging to self, because self doesn't actually have a solid existence anyway. So you couldn't really, because it's to the assumption of self. That's the problem. And assumption, or the belief in self, or the teaching on self. So that these different forms of clinging are ways that we relate to ourselves and the world around us. And of course, one of the ways of looking at it is these are this kind of negative emotional involvement in the how one wants things to be, how one wants the world to be, want oneself to be, one doesn't want them to be, how one wants them to be the same. All the permutations of trying to cling and hold and manipulate the world or oneself and people or the things around one in a way that is gratifying, is comfortable, is pleasing to one. And that's just not possible. The world has never been like that, and it never will be. But it's that the mind of not clinging, of not attachment, that allows the mind to be free, to be awake to the way things truly are. And so this willingness to keep reflecting and letting go. And that was, again, sort of thinking back to early training and living in the monastery, just the hearing over and over again, don't cling, don't attach. Yeah, yidman tu man. Or just let go, let it go, boy wang. Put things down. Just don't pick things up and carry them. And it's like the image that Ajahn Chah used of when he was building the ordination hall, and before the hall was even built, he had been offered all these very ancient ordination hall boundary markers. They were stone, and from along the border of Cambodia, so some were from very ancient Cambodian temples, and so that they were placed around the as the boundary markers, and there was many left over, so their sort of little garden was made around them. And anyway, one day he's walking past with somebody, and he says, you think those big stones, you think that's heavy? And because, oh yeah, they're really big, they're really heavy. And Ajahn Chah said, they're not if you don't pick them up. So that is, you know, that, and that is the, you know, say that not clinging, not attaching. Yeah, things are as they are, you know, but we can make it into a problem, we can make it into a burden by our attaching. When we see it clearly as it is, it is what it is. The world is always going to be, is always going to be the way, just the way it always was. Or like as the refrain that Ajahn Sumedho always uses, it's like this. It's just, it's like this. It can be beautiful or abhorrent, or it can be heavy or light, or it can be big or small. It just is what it is. So that sense of not clinging is so important. There's a very beautiful discourse that is given by Sariputta to Anatta Bindika, and it's in the latter part of the middle-length discourses. And Anatta Bindika is reaching the end of his life. He's very ill. Health is failing. He's not doing well at all. And he asks one of his servants to go and pay respects to the Buddha and bow at the feet of the Buddha and let him know that Anatta Bindika, of course, Anatta Bindika was the person who offered the Buddha's monastery, Jetavana, and invited the Buddha to take up residence in Savatthi, and previously he had been in the Magadha area of central India, and this is a bit more north. Of course, those who went with Ajahn Yaniko on the pilgrimage went to Savatthi and got to see these places. I haven't seen it yet. So Anatta Bindika was the progenitor of the Sangha moving to establishing itself in that area. And long association with the Buddha, and he's coming to the end of his life. And also, this is I just recently read a fictionalized account of Anatta Bindika's passing in the forthcoming television series. I got to read the Ajahn Jayasaro screenplay of this, that is hopefully going to be made into a series, film series, TV series, if things come to him. Anyway, and of course it was very touching. But he sends word to the Buddha to pay respects and let him know that Anatta Bindika is failing, and offers his respects. And then he also asks them to go to pay respects to Sariputta, and similarly let him know that, but then also made the request if Sariputta was able, if he could come and visit him. And again, it's interesting that because Anatta Bindika had tremendous faith in Sariputta, and so then Sariputta and Ananda went to visit Anatta Bindika and ask him how he's doing, and of course he said, well, I'm not doing well. My comfort and ease is decreasing, and my discomfort and dis-ease is increasing. And my pain is increasing. My sense of lack of pain is definitely not there. And it gives these very descriptive images, and there's kind of like stock phrases in the suttas, but it's very, very vivid, the various pain and discomfort that he's experiencing. And then Sariputta gives him a teaching. He says, on not clinging. And so, you know, to pay attention to not cling to the I, and therefore, say, my consciousness will not be dependent on the I. And then he goes on and says, I will not cling to the ear, and my consciousness will not be dependent on the ear. I will not cling to the nose, the tongue, the body, the mind, and my consciousness will not be dependent on the mind. I will not cling to sights. Of course, then he goes, I will not cling to sight, sounds, smells, taste, touch, mind objects, and my consciousness will not be dependent on those things. So I'll not cling to eye consciousness, ear consciousness, and so on, and my consciousness will not be dependent on mind consciousness. It goes through contact, eye contact, ear contact, and through them, and my consciousness will not be dependent on mind contact. And I'm going through feelings that arise dependent on the eye, and go through the six sense bases. And then he goes through, and he's saying, I will not cling to earth element, water element, fire element, air element, space element, consciousness element, and my consciousness will not be dependent on these elements. I'll not cling to the sphere of infinite space, the sphere of infinite consciousness, all the immaterial forms, meditation attainments that are very refined, and my consciousness will not be dependent on these. Not cling to what is, there's another configuration of seen, heard, sensed, cognized, and my consciousness will not be dependent on these things. And then there's a sense of, and as I dwell not clinging, the heart will be released. And so that this, just going through every sort of course, in typical Sariputta style, incredibly thorough and very detailed and very profound. And so that Anathapindika starts to weep and sort of shedding tears. And Ananda is very concerned. You know, are you faltering? Are you slipping away? And I'm kind of upset in some way. And Anathapindika says, I am not faltering. I am not slipping away in any way. It's just I'm so moved and touched by this profound teaching. I've never heard anything as deep as that. And in all my years of looking after the Buddha and the Noble Sangha and Sariputta, these are teachings that are usually given to monastics. And he said, and Anathapindika says, you should give these teachings to lay people as well, because they will be a great benefit. So this is very beautiful discourse on not clinging, and just how paying attention to that, how the mind does cling, how it does attach to the just anything, you know, whether it's good or bad, right or wrong, coarse or refined, you know, we'll tend to go for it and create problems around it. It's just as the insidious habit that we have as human beings. And so just that reminder to be able to attend to non-clinging. There's also a couple suttas that formed, especially when living in Thailand. And when I was learning the Thai language, besides listening to Ajahn Chah and the teachers at Wat Pho Phong, and be reading Dhamma books, and Ajahn Buddhadasa was one of the great teachers of the time, and also he was one of the few that had books printed, his teachings printed, and so that they were available to read. So I learned a lot of my Thai language from reading Ajahn Buddhadasa books. But there was whole sets of teachings that he gave on not clinging and how important this was as a foundation of the Buddha's teaching and practice. And this is some way that he would say, yeah, there's nothing to do, nothing to be, nothing to have. And it's just, don't cling, don't attach, don't get tangled up. But he also referred to a teaching that the Buddha gave as a teaching in brief. And in Pali, it's Abhedam Analang Abhinivesaya, and it's still. And it can be translated in a variety of ways. Say all things are unworthy of attachment is one. I think that's Ajahn Jeff. Bhikkhu Bodhi translates it as something like nothing is worthy of adhering to. Nothing is worthy of adhering to. And translation that I don't know where it comes from, but it always stuck in my mind. And nothing whatsoever should be clung to. And so that you know, very emphatic statement. But it comes from a teaching that the Buddha gave in a couple of places when he's asked for a teaching in brief that leads to awakening, to Nibbana. And the Buddha gives this teaching as to say, you know, when one hears, say, nothing whatsoever should be clung to, then one knows everything. One knows that one's heard, you know, what one's heard, when you know enough now. When you've heard that, you know everything. When you know everything, you completely understand everything. When you completely understand everything, you begin to contemplate and reflect on the impermanence of all phenomena. And then contemplating that impermanence, one say, contemplates with dispassion, with viraga, with a fading away. And then one contemplates with a sense of cessation, of ending, of releasing, and then contemplates with relinquishment as a foundation. And then as one contemplates with relinquishment, one is established in dispassion. And there is this fading away of attachment. Of course, it's also, those are the same series of how the discourse on mindfulness of breathing ends. And that's the how one relates to experience of dhammas, of phenomena. But then the Buddha said, as one sees with this sort of fading away, this dispassion, then the mind is released, and one experiences Nibbana in the here and now, in the present. And this can be a direct catalyst for the release into liberation. When the heart is liberated, the Buddha is very emphatic. So that this simple phrase of, nothing whatsoever should be clung to, has its implications. It plays itself out in ways that are liberating, and to be able to keep turning the mind to that. How do we let go? How do we not get attached? And again, it's not that detachment and indifference that is aimed for, but the releasing of that clinging and holding to what is inevitably leading to suffering and negative consequences in the heart, that one is willing to release. And there's just paying attention to letting go, because when we hold, you know, we end up, it's like the kind of like the shaggy dog tail that Ajahn Chah gives to, when he talks about clinging and this, about this. He's a, you know, very virtuous man, was the head man of the village, very virtuous, very good person, and always wanting to do good things, but he was also, he used to get irritated and upset when things didn't quite go his way, or when his relatives came over, or his friends visited, and things wouldn't be quite in the right place, and there'd be, so he'd get upset, and they didn't do things in exactly the way he wanted. I mean, he was the head man of the village, so he was, you know, always getting upset when people didn't quite do the right thing. But he was focused on goodness, and so one of the things that he did was build a, he thought, well, one of the things we could build is make a meeting hall, a sala, in the village, and so that it would be a place where travelers, and this is very common in Thailand, particularly in the old days, there would be a sala built just for people who were traveling, and they could stop, and there was always a place to stay in the villages. And so he built it, and he was super pleased with it, and as things happened, his life came to an end, he passed away. But because of his attachment to this hall and the good deeds that he had done, he is born as a hungry ghost there. And sort of, he's a ghost, and he led a good life, so he was a, you know, comfortable ghost. But there's a group of travelers stopped and stayed at the in the village and stayed in the sala, and they'd been received by the villagers, and it all went very well. And then it came to the for these people to have their settle down for the evening, go to sleep. So they do, and the old head man of the village was looking at it, and it was kind of upsetting to him because they were resting, and but they were really not neat and tidy, and it was just so. Then and he just looked at them, and you know, their heads are all it's not straight or neat and tidy. So then he started pulling them, and he's as a ghost, he's sort of pulling them, getting them all lined up. A lot of effort as a ghost to do that. And he gets the heads all lined up. And he's, wow, okay, yeah, this is good. Okay, great. And he's going to go back to wherever this ghost go. Then he sees the feet. Feet are all lined up. And then he's going to straighten everything out again. So that's how he spent the night. And he wasn't happy. Because you never get everybody lined up. Nobody's the same size. And that's kind of Ajahn Chah talking about, you know, say the problems we create in our lives, trying to make things line up the way we think they should be, or we think, and especially in the human realm, people are different, and the world is different, and just how do we live without getting stuck in our opinions, our views, our desires, our preferences, our cravings, and our sense of what I think is right. And, you know, we create so much suffering, so that non-attachment and non-clinging is that, yeah, one lives with loving kindness and compassion, but one also lives with wisdom. So that I'll offer that for reflection this evening.